Blog Talk Radio.
Going to join us. I'll pull him in here in just a second. We're going to be discussing the Committees of Safety Common Law Court project that he has going on, and what's updated on that. And we got some, you know, exciting news about that. And another topic we're going to cover tonight, which is of interest to all, is the Underground Railroad. A lot of talk going on about it, and we're going to shed some light on the real situation, past, present, and future. So you don't want to miss that. We're going to cover that here at probably our second hour. We got a lot of people joining us here tonight, so you all welcome any new folks that are just tuning in, and feel free to go over to the Watchmen of America website. That's www.watchmenofamerica.com, and check out what the Watchmen is all about. And we're going to give away a couple of those nice neck knives people ranting about. We'll give a couple of those away tonight, so get your little Google fingers ready. I've got some trivia for you tonight. One will be a little easy. The other one might be a little bit hard. They're both involved oldie songs, so I'll play a song and ask you a trivia question about it. And you know, if you're the right caller with the correct answer, you'll get a fantastic neck knife. There's a picture of it on the website there to the lower right of the chat room. So we're going to be back with Gary Hunt here just in a minute. Until then, you all hang loose and hear some Charlie Daniels. We'll be right back.
America's sick of the fall.
we're back. Apologize, my blog talk switchboard's dragging just a little bit this evening for some reason. I closed everything out, but anyhow, you're tuning in to the Watchman Wednesday show. I'm your host Freebird, and we've got Gary Hunt on the line. Gary, you with me?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right, fantastic. We had Gary on a while back, and he had come on the show and introduced to us a project that he had going on with the a common law court system, and had a really great discussion about the committees of safety and why all that stuff's important. But, you know, we wanted to get you back on here and get an update on, because I understand some exciting things have been happening with the common law court project. You finally made a lot of headway. You got a first case, you know, coming up and stuff. Gary, tell us what's going on.
Okay, well, this is kind of a commercial before the big show, but the common law court we've talked about before, and we had a number of volunteers for the grand jury and the petit jury. I will say that I got to back up a little in history. In the 90s, I wrote an article called Reliance. There were some things happening around the country, kind of like they are now, and everybody said they're going to go to people's aid when the time comes, and they have to. And so whenever anything happened, everybody made excuses why they, even though they said they were going to do something, they made excuses why they didn't do it. Well, with the common law court, we've had the same thing. We've had a lot of people volunteer. Now, common law court's kind of neat because of all the talking you do on the internet, you're only talking to a few people. You can do something productive, something that'll help the entire Patriot community, but people volunteered, and then they walked away from the reliance that we had on them, thinking we had enough people to carry out the job. So we had to bring people in later to do it. And that's right. Happening with the petit jury right now, where we had enough people to have the jury, and, the jury pool foreman is Kev. He's been doing a job keeping it coordinated. Now, that doesn't mean he'll be the jury foreman when we start trial, but the court needed somebody to act as the contact point, and 11th Cav was that person, the guy with the grin there, with the tongue sticking out like a dog or something.
Absolutely, yeah.
And he's done a good job of it, but we've only got five of the petite jurors now out of the, I think we had 9 or 10, and so half of them have fallen by the wayside. They have not stood by when they were being relied upon to be available when the time came that they were going to do their bid. So we need some people that are willing to commit the time. If you just want your name up in lights and don't want to work for it, please don't volunteer, because it puts an additional burden on us on trying to put the pieces together. But to give you an update on the status, on September 12th, we started our first trial. It's gone through grand jury, and indictment came out. The accuser is Randy Mack, Randy Mascarenhas, which most people here recognize the name. The accused is Jim Stack. I'm not even going to try his last name.
His name is Jim Stakovich, I believe is how they say it. Yeah, Jim Stack.
That's
everybody
close
knows
enough. Yeah. Mike speaks for me in that case. There are charges including libel, slander, threatening, and incitement. The petit jury will determine whether the charges are valid or not. It could be that the charges are invalid, some or all of them. But it's going to take people to take the time. You don't have to get up and go anywhere. It's not going to take any gas. You will have to every day or two at least check into the forum and catch up with what has happened prior to that point, so you stay current with what's happening.
Right.
But it's not a lot of effort. You'd spend less time there than you spend on this chat.
Exactly.
And I'm not saying the chat's a bad thing, but the consequences or the result of the common law court would be perhaps a way of stopping this infighting that goes on between people on the internet.
That's what I wanted to ask you about, because you know, we may have people here that hadn't tuned in before, and I wanted to, you know, for you to express what are real motive and purpose is to have this common law court amongst patriots in this internet community, because there's been a whole lot of dissension amongst website administrators and people from one site to another, and this fighting and bickering going on all over the internet, people attacking each other, and I thought this was a perfect solution for that.
Well, you know, if you look at the internet sites as politicians running for office, and they can either speak good of themselves or bad of the other guy. So there's a tendency to do both. They speak good of themselves,
right?
But they tend to speak bad of the other guys. And sometimes it's just made up stuff. Sometimes it's fed to them. It's just, but it's bullshit in many cases. But it tends to escalate. I call you something, you call me something, a little stronger words, and I call you something, a little stronger words, and it escalates. And what it does is it creates division, where some sites have threatened to remove people that are members of other sites.
Oh yeah.
And if we're all in this battle together, we need to get along. If
right.
we don't get along, we ain't gonna win. There's no way we can possibly win.
Yeah, we can't keep focused with everybody fighting amongst themselves, and that does happen. You've got people out there that have websites, and they want to dictate, you know, what people can and can't do if they become a member of their site, and things they can and can't say. And it, and what's happened in the past is they're jealous of one another's websites, and they sit there and they say, well, you know, if you're going to be a member over there, then we don't want you as a member here or participating. And it just creates a whole bunch of fighting, and it's gotten out of control to the point that I thought this was a very creative way to institute some sort of system to where we can at least put some of this stuff behind us and set it down and move forward, you know, because obviously they're not settling their differences on their own. But so it's like, let's determine who was right and wrong in this situation and have an impartial jury settle the argument for us, and then we can go on. Is that right?
Right. And if, you know, the accuser says that you're lying about me,
mm-hmm.
well, maybe he's telling the truth about the accuser. Now, how do you find out? All of the accuser, let's call him A, and the accused, let's call him B. All of A's friends say, hey, A's right, B's a bad guy. And all of B's friends say, A's wrong, B's a good guy.
Yeah.
And so the form that's being tested in is one that's based on a relationship with A or B. So you take the side that you want. And often you might have been a friend of A and B. And, you know, Mike can really
I can
understand this
one. I've been exactly like that, yeah.
You can be a friend to both of them. And, you know, in the case of Mike and the other guy, there wasn't any stretching. No, neither one of them said, look, if you like that guy, I don't want to talk to you anymore, fortunately, because they were level-headed people. But there was a little dissension between a couple of guys that one of them had introduced me to the other. But when it starts straining, and it gets into a pissing contest, and then it escalates, and it gets worse and worse, name-calling, YouTube videos, jamming people and everything. It serves nobody any useful purpose. It does serve the government quite well, though, because, hey, they can laugh at us because we can't even get along with ourselves. We all claim to be pursuing the same goal.
Well, you know, that was another thing that came up was that, you know, oftentimes there are people, you know, that are infiltrators that get in amongst these websites, and they deliberately cause these disturbances amongst the patrons, and they could very well be working for the other side. And this system here would, I think, take great steps in identifying who those people are.
It would possibly tend to out them.
The
guilty party is going to be guilty because of his ego or his just wanting his site to get the attention. He's called the other guy names to get people away from it. Or he's there to create dissension among the patriots. His motivation is not in the same direction that the rest of us. Now, if he's found guilty, if it's his ego, he's going to start thinking, well, maybe I was a little out of hand in calling names when I had no proof.
Right.
Now, if he works for the government, or if his government is his primary interest, he might go back to his boss and say, if he's found guilty, go back to his boss and say, hey, I've been outed. You better give me a new assignment.
Exactly.
So it might have that effect. Now, if if the guy doesn't go back to his boss and say, hey, I need a new assignment after the first trial, if he keeps doing it and he gets accused again and it gets found guilty, then eventually he's going to go back to his boss and say, hey, give me a new assignment. Nobody's listening to me anymore. I'm completely ineffective here. So I need a new assignment.
Yeah.
So
exactly.
It can serve us. We call it a common law court. It's not based on common law. Actually, its pattern is more on Judge Wapner's court from the 80s, I think. But both parties come in voluntarily. And when the indictment went out, it was based upon the complaint by the accuser. The grand jury went over many hours of audio tapes and sorted it out to what would be possible charges, identified them, and then an indictment with, I think it's 11 counts, has gone out, referring back where on the tapes specifically what was said and is part of the charge. It went to the accused, and he had 10 days to answer. He answered. He signed up on the form. And now, like I say, the trial starts on the 12th. Now, we would like to have actually 12 jurors and some extra jurors, some backup jurors, right, in case somebody fails to show by then. So we need people to volunteer. The link, I think, is at the bottom of the page. You can go down there.
We have a banner, if you scroll down, folks, right below on our chat room, right below the chat room, just keep scrolling down the page, you'll see a banner that says Committees of Safety Common Law Court, and that's how you get to the website we're talking about here.
And then look for volunteer, and what we need is volunteers for the petite jury, which is the trial jury, the ones that will hear the case.
Right.
The grand jury just considered the complaint that was filed by the accuser, and their job is done, and those that came all the way through with it did a wonderful job in sorting everything out and coming up with the 11 counts in the indictment.
Now, these jurors, these people who volunteer for service with the common law court thing, and they can remain completely anonymous, isn't that right?
They will be anonymous. In fact, there's, with both the grand jury and the petite jury, we've talked over things, how we're going to deal with things. Now, on the petite jury right now, the court has to know who you are. They have to have your email and all that. What we'll probably do when we get to the trial itself, or actually the deliberations on the trial, is to give you a false identity, juror number one, juror number two, juror number three, because when you go into deliberations, if your handle shows in the deliberations, then the rest of the jurors will know who you are. Well, the grand jury, that wasn't a problem because everybody takes an oath of secrecy. However, in this case, both the accuser and the accused are going to pick one juror so that they know that it's fair. We're doing everything we can to keep it as fair as possible. So there will be anonymity when we get to the trial point, but you do have to sign up as a real person. I would prefer to know your name, or the court would prefer to know your name, and you will have to sign up and have an email address. But when we get to the forum, you will not need to have that email address. We'll bypass that security, that intrusion security on the forum, so that you will be jurors one through whatever.
Well, that way, if they're a volunteer and they're a part of this jury and they don't want, because there is an open door there for people to harass someone if they, find for the plaintiff or the defendant in this case, and they get harassment by other people or maybe friends of one or the other. So that's why there's a strict anonymous a situation attached to these volunteers. That's to totally protect them so they can participate freely and not everybody knows who they are and things like that. So I thought that was a great idea.
Now, if any of the jurors have no objection, but in both the petite and the grand jury, this was discussed, and both were willing to put their names out, but then when it was pointed out that if you do on the Internet, that might suggest you to all kinds of things, spamming by people who want you, attempts to influence you, perhaps even threats to try and influence the outcome of the trial. So it will be up to the jurors. If they want to be known, they can be. But in both cases, they were not willing. They were willing to say who they were until they thought of the potential consequences of doing that on the internet and just subjecting themselves to all this garbage.
Right. So, well, you know, it was discussed early on that, you know, it might be questionable whether these people who are being accused of these things, like, you know, you got a fellow like Randy steps forward and says, you know, this person said this about me and is, you know, trying to trash me all over the internet patriot community and telling lies and things like that. And, you know, it was discussed that whether these people who are being accused would step forward and answer the accusations or not. And I'm really happy to hear that Jim Stack has stepped forward, has a man, and has decided to respond to this case. And, you know, in all hopes is that, you know, whatever be the result from the jury's decision is that, you know, whether they find right or wrong, especially in this situation, is that, you know, maybe that they can put this battle aside and one can admit, okay, you know, I responded and then you responded and we went back and forth. And then somewhere along the line, I was wrong. You know, these other people who looked at the case from the outside, and a lot of these people didn't really even know what this battle had gone on, but they're weighing the evidence and they see it and they decided to issue an indictment. So when it goes to the jury and they decide, okay, well, this, you know, the person being accused is, you know, wrong of these charges and innocent of these charges, but it'll give those guys an opportunity to say, okay, you know, I was wrong, and a jury of my peers has said so, and let's put it down and put it aside. That's the ultimate goal here, folks, is to bring people together, not create more dissension. But I'm right proud of Jim Stack for stepping up to the plate. I really, you know, we had questioned whether people would do that, and I think this is a sure sign that this may just work out, Gary. I'm really happy to hear that.
I am too. I've got to say, Jim was really a man for stepping up and answering this and respecting the forum that's going to allow the community to make determination and not leave it on one party or the other. And we also have to give credit to Randy Mack, too, because here we're venturing into something new, and Randy was willing to file the complaint in the first time, yeah, or in the first case.
Absolutely.
And so both of them deserve a lot of respect for their integrity and standing behind what they believe and be willing to place it in a forum where we can all participate in making the determination and solving these problems that exist throughout the community.
Yeah, I think this is just a wonderful thing. We've been encouraging people to get involved. There's a matter of fact, I think down there below where the banner is, there's a placard there that says volunteers needed and a direct link. So folks, get over there to the website and volunteer. They need jurors and all kinds of positions, and you need backups too. You know, that way, because some people may not be able to attend a court case at a given time, so they need backup jurors too, right?
We do, yes. Now, you don't have to be present since it's online and it's going to all be in writing, but you will have to come in every day or two or 3 days and kind of catch up, because it's all going to be done in a forum format, so you don't have to be there when the testimony is given, but you will have to pay fairly constant attention to it and stay current with what it was. Now, the jury will have a right to ask questions. They will do it through the clerk of the court, not directly, because the jurors during the trial will be in a read-only status on the forum. They won't be able to write anything. They will be able to discuss among themselves in a read-write forum in a different room, the jury deliberation room, to discuss it after the trial is over. But like any other jury, you know, you don't discuss it while it's going on, because you hear one side and you make a commitment. Well, hey, Randy had a very good line, so I believe him. And now you've made the decision, and so it's more difficult to overcome, and you've gone out publicly and said it. It doesn't make sense then for you to be in a position when you hear Jim's side to say, well, I'm going to stand behind what I said before. So by not discussing it until the trial's over, you've weighed both sides a little more fairly and not stuck your neck on the block and said, well, I've made my decision already and I'm going to stick to it. We know there are some patriots out there that are rather hard-headed, and they have trouble backing up on occasion. And in a way, that's part of the problem.
Absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, when people start attacking one another, and they do it on a number of different levels, some people get carried away with these attacks and things, too. It's just not good, and there needs to be some sort of medium in which they can settle these things. And I just, like I said, I thought this was a great idea from the beginning. I'm glad to see that you are near completion of getting this first case, done and over with. So, folks, if you can volunteer some time, it doesn't take a whole lot of work, a lot of time. Like Gary said, it's all done on the internet in a forum, but it does take dedication. You know, if you're going to volunteer, stay with it, and you check in with the forum, you keep up to date on the cases and the things that you're a part of with the program, and respond accordingly and things like that. So I don't think it's like it's not going to take, you know, 3 or 4 hours out of your day every day, but you got to, like he said, you'd spend more time in this chat than you would, participating in this program, which I think is just fantastic.
But it takes your participation for it to work.
Correct. That's what it's all about, and participation. And with all of us working together, we've got to get through a lot of these problems that are existing out here in this Patriot community. And believe me, folks, I mean, I personally myself have been the target. I don't think there's anybody out there that has a Patriot website even remotely related to the Patriot community that hasn't been attacked. In one way or another, they've all been attacked, and attacked by the best of them out there. And this is, I just think, a means to get past all that and have people start working together. You know, imagine all of our strength and our effort and our knowledge working together instead of bickering back and forth like that. You know, we can get a whole lot more done a lot faster. You know, stay focused on the missions.
Let's make a commitment to participate and then volunteer.
Absolutely. So let me post the link there in the chat room one more time, and you guys, for your convenience, it's www.committee.org/court. And or there's a banner on our website, and go down there and check that out. He's got all the information on there, what's involved, what your responsibilities would be, and such, and we encourage you to volunteer. So we're going to move on with the next part of our show here, but I'm going to take this opportunity. We're going to take a little song break, and we're going to give you a trivia question and give the folks an opportunity to win a neck knife. We got a nice neck knife. It's this is the longer version. We got two versions, one short, one's long. This is the 6-inch neck knife. It's really a wonderful tool to have. So we're going to give you an opportunity. I've got a song I'm going to play. Now, this is an old one. It's from the 70s. And the artist's name is Jinx Dawson. And the song is 110 Soldier. The first person to call in and tell me what movie this song is from will win that neck knife. First person to call in and tell me what movie this song comes from, 714-888-7404. And we'll be right back.
Bloody morning.
Want a nice neck knife, you know, to send me your email address, click the contact button up there. Of course, you know my email address. Just send me a note, and we'll mail that right out to you. Thank you for calling in, and I really appreciate it. You are correct.
Well, dude, thank you.
Thank you, sir. All right. Well, there you go, folks. Another winner. Like that guy says in Vegas, winner, winner, chicken dinner. So congratulations to Best Shot there for winning that knife. Really love that song. It has a really strong message. A lot of people miss the message of that song. So you're back with Freebird, and we got Gary Hunt here. And Gary, was there anything else you want to say about the common law court thing before we move on? Or?
Well, I've said it before. We need some volunteers, and we need people committed to see this thing through and see something productive happen within the Patriot community that will help bring us together.
Absolutely. Let's put an end to all this fighting. And if we can't put an end to the fighting, let's at least identify the damn troublemakers out there and avoid them like the plague. How's that? So I guess the part everybody's been anxiously waiting for was we've been on this discussion about the whole Charles Dyer situation going on, where he's fled his court appearance on Monday, and it led to one thing to another, and a lot of people have been talking about the Underground Railroad, and other websites have been talking about it too. And so me and Gary thought it would be interesting for you folks to really get a grasp on what is the Underground Railroad. So Gary and I are going to try to give you some information tonight about that, and more or less, you know, why it's important. But Gary, can you explain to the folks what is the Underground Railroad? There's a lot of misconceptions. People think it involves an actual train or railway and all that, and it doesn't.
No, it doesn't. I can talk pretty confidently about Underground Railroads in the modern era. I've looked into Underground Railroads in the past, so there I'm speaking historically, and I haven't done extensive study on it, but I've actually participated in one such event, and when I went up to Washington and Idaho, I met some people who had participated in the other. There is a world of difference between then, in the 1850s and 60s, and now. In the 1850s and 60s, the playing field was this. You had the southern states, and they had slaves, and most of the slaves never got off the plantation. Only the privileged ones were allowed to go into town and pick up goods and everything. For the most part, those people spent their entire lives on the plantation that they were on.
Mm-hmm.
Virginia, being close to the northern states, is probably where most of the underground railroads existed. But you got to think about it. I mean, you're owned by somebody, and you've got to take a lot of risk to leave that ownership. So you've got to somehow meet somebody, whether they sneak on and talk to you at night or something. You've got to begin making contacts with people, and then you've got to get the courage to leave, because you know if you get caught, you might be whipped to death.
Yeah.
You might be. They had devices, cages that went on people's heads, and as punishment, they'd have to wear this metal cage for weeks or months as punishment for trying to escape. So it was a pretty risky business. Nowadays, we look at it a little differently, and we look at the fact that if somebody's caught, like, say, Charles Dyer, he could end up in a shootout, even a one-way shootout, and be killed in the process, or at best be arrested and put in prison and be out of the game for the rest of the game.
Hang on, we're getting callers here, Gary. Hang on, let's see who some of these people are. See what questions they got. Hang on just a second. Area code 606. Okay. You're on the air with me and Gary.
Yep.
Hello.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're on the air. Do you have a question?
Well, I was just going to add two things there. Sometimes they even cut their toes off so they couldn't run.
Mm-hmm.
And they were very severe in a lot of things that they did.
Absolutely.
And
hang on.
Go ahead.
Underground Railroad went all the way up through Michigan and into Canada to get them out of the United States so that they couldn't be brought back. And they went.
Right.
Part of it went through New York, upstate New York.
Absolutely.
The consequences could be rather severe, and you know, I haven't gone into detail, but I imagine cutting toes off would keep somebody from running. You know, all they had to do is walk in the field and pick the cotton at that point. Canada was a desired location in most cases. In 1854, there was a case, Dred Scott versus Sanford, which Dred Scott was the slave, and the decision basically, he said that a slave is like a horse and has to be, the horse escapes, it has to be returned. So even the court system was against allowing this to happen. Now, there were juries that would not convict for people convicted, but the people that ran the underground railroads were also subject, depending on the location they were in, were subject to punishment for participation because they failed to return the horse to the owner. So the consequences existed all around. However, the further north you went, or if you went into states that tend to be more free, and Michigan was one of them, the entire northern tier of states was pretty much open to it, but Maryland had a lot of problems. They were kind of mixed. They had slaveholders versus abolitionists. And so the risk was fairly great for both the both participants and the runaways.
Let me add this other caller, Gary. We got another caller.
Okay.
Area code 620. You're on the air with Freebird and Gary.
Hey, Freebird. This is Dave Wallace from Wally 515 Southeast Kansas. Is that you?
How you doing? How you doing, sir?
Hey, I don't mean to take away from the history, but let's talk about real facts. And I'm talking about 2011, 2012, maybe even 2013. What the heck are you talking about cutting toes off when it comes to Southeast Kansas, the Underground Railroad? Because I tell you what, if I got a patriot in my house, I'm going to take care of him, and I ain't going to cut his toes off just to help him.
No, we don't want you cutting nobody's toes off, my brother. We're covering a little bit of history to let people know what the railroad actually is. There's a lot of people out there that don't know what the Underground Railroad is. There's a lot of misconceptions, and that leads up to the next part of our conversation, which we're getting to, is why and how would it be important to us now, as well as, you know, maybe even developing a newer system based on our new situations, new time and age, and technology and stuff. So, yeah, we're getting to that. But now let's talk about that right now.
I tell you right now, I got some horse flesh over here. I got some willoughbys. I even got some illegal aliens showing up at my doorstep, and I got to deal with them way up here in southeastern Kansas. So I tell you what, if you want your Underground Railroad to kick in, I'm a willing participant. I'll help you out when it comes to patriots. And when it comes to stupidity, I got an answer for that, too.
Absolutely.
Well, I don't want to call it stupid, Wally, but what you just said on the Internet made you at risk for both the person trying to get out and for yourself.
Exactly. Let's talk about that.
Okay. Now, the Underground Railroad then was set up by the abolitionists, but it was set up as a need. If there were no fleeing slaves, there was no need for a railroad. So a fleeing slave, say an abolitionist, would contact a slave, talk to him, and say, do you want to run away? And the guy said, yes. And I said, well, okay, I guess we can hide you. And then they would talk to friends that were other abolitionists. For comparison, the abolitionists were kind of like the patriot community today, with a single exception. The abolitionists weren't infiltrated. They didn't have informants and agents amongst them. The patriot community, we know, has informants and agents amongst us. The government even admits it. So the abolitionist would talk to another abolitionist, you know, I've got this guy coming out. We need to get him to Canada. And so it would go down by word of voice. There was no Internet. There was no way to capture the communication on the Internet or the telephone. It would be carried by courier. If it was written, it could be carried by mouth, you know, just somebody, you know, talking to his neighbor and setting up this line of railroad. So it was a lot different playground back then than it is now. And what I just said about Wally putting himself at risk by saying that, if the government's keeping a list of people that hold their hands up and say, look, I'd be glad to be part of an underground railroad, then the government knows where people might go. You know, they got a list of the people that have volunteered. And at that point, you have negated your ability to help, because what you have done is just created a rabbit trap. They stake out your house if somebody in your area flees, and they see this guy come in, and they go in and grab him. Or better yet, they let him go stay with you. And then when you shuttle him on to the next person, they could either grab him then, where you still think that you're a safe house for him, or they could follow him to the next safe house. And they can, like they do with drug dealers, they can track this system back. So the best thing you can do is not openly on the Internet or on the phone or by any interceptable means of communication acknowledge your willingness to participate in the Underground Railroad. Now, this
I have to disagree with you on that. I have to disagree. All right, let me tell you this. I am one of them patriots that refuse to be afraid of my government. 3245 Highway 169, Cherryville, Kansas.
Oh,
67335. If you want to come to my house and you're a patriot, I'll help you out. If you're the government, you're more than welcome, and I will more than gladly give you my weapon, one bullet at a time.
Oh, Lord. Well, you know, I appreciate your patriotism, Dave. I really do. But see, what you have to understand, what the Underground Railroad is, let's talk about in terms of this whole Charles Dyer situation. Okay, we know he's went into hiding. There's a national manhunt going on all over the country for him. And, you know, it's, you know, we know you're not afraid. There's a lot of patriots out there that's not afraid of their government and things like that. But when you're participating in something this covert, you have to.
And you don't publicize it on the doggone radio.
Right.
You don't publicize it on the Internet. you don't give Wally 515 the information, because I tell you right now, if you give me the information, I'm going to promote it, I'm going to advertise it,
well,
I'm going to do everything I can to get the word out that, hey, by God, there's a knucklehead out there that don't believe in this, and we're going to help them out by providing the infrastructure. In Southeast
right.
Kansas, you have an infrastructure on Highway 169 down here in Podunk Nowhere.
Well, Wally, let me put it this way. If I was on the run and I was given your address, knowing what I know now, I would definitely tear that address up and throw it away, because there would it could be a trap for me, regardless of your willingness to give the gun but one bullet at a time. If my effort is to stay alive and flee, it is not to go where they can identify that this might be one of the places Hunt might go. So, you know,
and why would you advertise the whole aspect in any form whatsoever?
Well, I think that you ought to listen to the program, and maybe you'll find out.
What we're doing is trying to explain to people how it works, what it has to do. I mean, we're not advertising, you know, anything in particular, but these type of things have to be set up in local areas, you know, silently and covertly. It's not something we put on a website for the whole nation to see. And, you know, it's like, you know, the idea was, you know, well, we want volunteers to participate in an underground railroad. And then all these people jump up and volunteer, and they post these people's emails or contact information on a website. Well, you just gave away all of your secrets. I mean, you just listed everybody who's participating in your underground railroad. So you've just, compromise the entire project. See, so what we're trying to do is educate people on the intricacies of how it works, and then they set it up silently in their areas. And by word of mouth and things of that nature is how word spreads to where this thing can be functional. But we can't advertise some big project.
So what you're saying is I'm a big part in church. Go ahead and say it. I'm a big part in church.
Well,
don't come to Wally World, because Wally World will let you know what's going on in Wally World.
Let me talk about the two instances in the 90s. Actually, both of them were in 1993. The first one was in early February 1993. Now, I had put out a newspaper called The Outpost of Freedom. In doing so and doing some of the articles, I was speaking to some people in San Francisco or the Bay Area about ritual child abuse and Project Monarch and things like that. So I ran a series of articles, and I talked with a couple people out there. Then one afternoon, this guy knocks on my office door. I'm a land surveyor, had my survey office, Gary D. Hunt, professional land surveyor. There's a knock on the door. Some of my friends are in there. We're drinking some beer and perhaps doing some other things. This guy knocks on the door, and I said, well, come on in. And he said, no, you got people in there. And I said, just a minute. And I asked the people to leave. They left, and I invited him in then. And he said, my name's Peter Chernoff. I'm here with my girlfriend and my son. We're fleeing from a warrant out for me in California. Now, he'd come all the way across the country based on him talking to some people that he knew that had faith in me, and gave him my address, told him to come out and see me. I hadn't advertised as an underground railroad. Now, we had at that time what we called our security team, which was seven of us that were committed to protecting each other, something hopefully all of you have in your neighborhood already. So Peter, Linda, and Alex, the guy that drove them out there didn't even want to meet me. He just wanted to get in his car and go back to California. He didn't want to be tied to this thing. Now, I can talk about it now, because when Peter finally turned himself in and did a plea agreement, he got in the plea agreement that no other prosecutions would result as a consequence of people helping him hide out. But anyway, they spent the first night in my office. The next night, I got one of the members of our security team to take them into his place. So at this point, if they had come to my place, if the FBI had been watching it, for example, he could have been caught. But what we did, they got on the floor of the car. I drove them down to the next location, And they got out of the car when we made sure nobody was around. They went inside. They were not allowed to go to the windows of the house or anything. It was very secretive. In fact, the rest of the security team members didn't even know what we were doing because they didn't need to know. So it was just the two of us then that knew that they were there. Eventually, Linda wanted to go back to California. Then I went to Waco, and then when I came back, Linda wanted to go back to California. So I drove her out to California. Peter and Alex stayed hidden. Now, eventually, Peter wanted to turn himself in, so he called the police in West Palm, Florida, where he was hoping this one cop who had done ritual child abuse investigations would help him. He did. He helped him get in jail, and Peter's son, Alex, was turned back to his mother, who was in, Peter believes, was involved with ritual child abuse. But the fact was, we hid him for over 2 months. The FBI came to my office, and the reason they came to my office is when he was at the second house, I took my video camera. He did a presentation. I sent it to San Francisco radio station at his request. Then I gave the camera away so it could not be traced back. We had a sheet behind him, so there was nothing identifiable. So because I'd sent the video to California, the FBI came and talked to me. Now, would I lie to the FBI? You're damn right I would. I have no respect for them. They would lie to me. They
Good
have lied
you.
To me, and I will lie to them. And I will say that publicly, but that won't get somebody caught for what they're doing, for running away. So that was one instance. And it just, you know, the Underground Railroad was created out of demand, as it was back in the 1850s, but with caution. I did not receive a phone call from California saying somebody's coming out there. The other instance was one of the Davidians, a guy named Paul Fada. And if you remember Paul Fada, he stayed hidden during the entire siege. About a week after the siege, he flew back into the open arms of attorneys that he'd already arranged. Now, Paul Fada went to the gun shows for David Koresh. He met a lot of people at gun shows, face to face. He got to know them. He picked one that he trusted. He went up to Washington and talked to this guy and said, look, they have a warrant out for me. I don't want to be arrested. So the guy in Washington, and I met the guy in Washington later when I was up in that area, said, okay. And so he stayed at a couple different places in Washington. But since Paul was known to have been at a gun show in Washington, what they did is they got him to Idaho, where he stayed until he decided to turn himself in. The FBI was looking all over. They had a national alert out for Paul Fada. They never found him until Paul got off the airplane in, I guess, Dallas, Fort Worth Airport, when he came back down to Waco, and he had attorneys waiting for him. He did end up in jail, but he was ready to turn himself in. Now, that one was created on demand as well. He went to somebody he knew and trusted. That guy then went to other people he knew and trusted. Then that guy went to somebody he knew and trusted, and it got him to Idaho. I don't know how many stops it took to get to Idaho. My best guess is perhaps three or four. But the thing is, it created itself when the demand was there, and it was created by people who knew people face-to-face. I can talk to you for hours on the Internet, and you might be taking notes on an FBI daily report, for all I know. But when I meet you face-to-face and look into your eyes, and especially if I've known you and talked to you a while, I've got a better sense, and I'm more willing to put my faith in your hands. So if you were contacted at whatever highway that is, Wally, by somebody that you knew and trusted for a long time and said, hey, we've got somebody that's got to get out of the area, well, bring him over. That's the way it develops.
If Bulldog knows me personally, face-to-face, I've seen him face-to-face. If Bulldog were to call me face-to-face and say, listen, I got a favor and I need this favor, there would be no questions asked. Wally 515 would help Bulldog. When it comes to somebody from I don't have no clue, bumfuck Egypt, and he wanted me to freaking covertly take care of somebody, I tell you what, Wally 515 would do a personal investigation, find out if this scumbag was a pedophile or some other scumbag, and then I would make my own decision upon face-to-face discussion with this suspect and decide whether I turn this sucker in or not. Now, when it comes to hiding from the government, well, the government's the government. They're SOBs, and they earn their reputation. They get what they deserve. Now, when it comes to disobeying them, that's a personal choice. And that's where the Underground Railroad comes into play, and it comes as a personal choice of whether or not you're going to thumb your nose at the authorities and say, you know what, Fourth Amendment says you've got to have a warrant to come to my house and ask me dumbass questions, and then I'm gonna live up to that. Now, anything else, is it the personal favor, like somebody that I trust, then you're absolutely right. Then the patriot resistance needs to be exactly what it is, and then we need to resist the stupidity of those who think they know better than we do.
Well, to, like I say, when you say, let me put it another way. When you go on the internet and say, I will be a safe house, we ought to just send you an 4x8 sign that says, if you're looking for fleeing patriots, don't look here.
And you got a big flag up there, and it says Wally 515. You got a big flag right there. Not so good an idea.
It needs to build itself out of necessity. It's the only safe way for the person fleeing, as well as the person that's housing them and in part of the network that's moving him to wherever he's going.
Okay, and I understand that part of it.
So in each state, you know, locally, let's say you address this thing.
Each community. Where you know the people. If you have an organization, if it's Watchmen of Florida and they've all met each other,
somebody had asked me the other day, they said, you know, do you set something like this up on a national scale or not? And my answer to that immediately was no, because what you're going to do is, you know, you know people in your area. You know who you can trust in your area and who you can't. And I think the point that Gary's making is that, you know, it starts small in one community, and then it can jump across to another community, and it can even jump across state line. For instance, you know, if someone were to come to me, I have people I know that I can trust that would, you know, you could pass this person to, and then, you know, that person may know somebody he can trust across, say, the Tennessee line. And then,
right.
You know, that's how you move people from one place to another. But you have to have those few people in those small communities that you know you can trust. You can't just say, well, yeah, I'll take that guy from Arizona in my home, and I live in Florida, but I don't know him. You know, I mean, and they don't know you. They don't know but what they're walking into a den of alphabet soup. You know, you got to pass these people along, and starting in small community groups, and that's why this Underground Railroad has a lot of history, folks. There were secret codes of terminology involved in the terms of railroad language that they used. And one of the symbols a lot of people don't realize that was used was the common railroad lantern. So if they, you know, saw a person's house who was supposed to be an abolitionist who had a lantern hanging on the front of their house, that was a sign.
The lantern would be on the hitching post, from what I've read.
Right, and
it
would be an indication that this would be a safe house to go to, and then they even had, you know, different signals. So there were things of that nature, and I guess the point would be, you know, today with all of our technology and things that we have available to us, and the massive amount of road networks that have been constructed over all these centuries, it seems like moving people around would be a lot easier than before, but you have to keep in mind that our modern-day technology can be a detrimental hindrance, because you can have your cell phones have GPS in them that can be tracked without your knowledge and all that stuff. So you almost have to go back in time and not involve the internet. You can't involve your cell phone. You can't involve modern vehicles with GPS tracking on them. I mean, you've got to take a lot of things in consideration if you're going to do something like this. And one point I'll make to people right up front here is, you know, back in the day when this Underground Railroad was created from the beginning, it was considered illegal because you were acting against the government.
What's illegal still today?
So today, if you were involved in something like this, You know, a lot of people say, well, you know, you're harboring a fugitive or you're aiding, abetting a criminal because they're charged by the government. You know how that works. You're guilty until proven innocent, according to them, not the way the law works, where you're innocent until proven guilty. But take for example, let's take Charles Dyer's situation. It became tragic in that he felt like he's not getting a fair trial. He's not getting a fair shake. Evidence has been suppressed. There was DNA evidence that was brought forth. The prosecution requested the DNA evidence, and the DNA evidence proved otherwise. So what did? They suppressed it. So, you know, how can the guy get a fair trial? So out of desperation, when a person gets to that point where you've got malicious prosecution of a person and they're denying and suppressing evidence that would free them of these charges and things, what do you do as a patriot? Do you stand by these people when they're in need and they decide, look, you know, if I stay here, I'm at risk? Because, you know, it's a personal choice, like you said, Wally. You know, you have to decide, am I going to do the right thing from a moral and ethical standpoint and stand behind this patriot and help him in any way I can? Or, you know, am I just not going to get involved because I'm afraid that, you know, the government's going to come after me because I harbored a fugitive? I mean, it becomes a personal choice, but people need to know that, yes, they would consider this, what we're talking about here this evening, as illegal. You know, I mean, that's
and
just
I can tell you right now, Highway 169, Cherryville, Kansas, Wally 515 will help you out as long as you're not a scumbag.
Now, as far as Charles Dyer, too, understand that there was one other factor that played into his decision to leave. He was ready to go to court on Monday. However, on Friday evening or Saturday morning, his trailer burned to the ground, and everything he owned was destroyed except his motorcycle and the clothes he was wearing.
Mm-hmm.
So all of a sudden, he's got nothing. Then he called the court and asked for a continuance, and, you know, obviously the clerk or nobody at the courthouse nobody at the courthouse is willing to make any commitment for a continuance. And so he fled because he's lost everything now. He's got nothing. Is that a sign from God saying, get out of Dodge or what?
Yeah, get the
now, apparently, since then, they have granted the continuance, but he's already made that first step. And now he's at risk. If he comes in, he needs to do like Paul Fata did and go in with an attorney so that he's not shot on sight. They have told that he's armed and dangerous. If he was not there, did not know
more,
about
get the him fire. A couple more patriots around him besides them just armed. Them lawyers ain't got but so many handguns. I'll tell you right now, you get some patriots around him with some little handguns, a little couple long guns, then he'll be protected. So if you got this Underground Railroad and they get called out, they get like this Patriot Guard situation where they get called out and they run up their real heartbeat like Wally 515 would, then I tell you what, you'll get some backup. And if you want to come out to my place, I tell you what, we got 360. I tell you what, there must be 4 or 5 miles before you even come up to my place. And I tell you what, Bobby Dirks, my little local sheriff, I'll get him on the cell phone and ask him what the heck you're doing before he even comes up to the house.
Yeah, a guy named Custer did that once, didn't he?
Custer decided to go ahead and do it on his own. I'm not talking about doing it on my own. I'm just telling you.
You don't think that they have an overwhelming force if they find out where you are and they decide they want to get the guy that you're harboring?
I guarantee you that they can. I am way more
my
than,
point is your last stand, and then you're out of the game, and you can't help the rest of us. Using discretion and keep, you know, living to fight another day.
You have to pick your battles, I guess, right?
Yeah, well, pick battles.
You can pick your battles. My battles are public battles. I'm not going to hide from battles. And I don't take away from anything you've got to say because you got a very important point. You can't just go piss in the wind and think you're not going to get sprayed by the piss. You got to be covert, and I agree with that point. I'm just saying right now that me personally, Wally 515 here in off of Highway 169, I'm not going to hire for no piss ant sheriff or federal or KBI or any other scumbags. They want to come out to my house. then I got a welcome party for him.
Mike, you going to make the sign and send it to Wally? You know, the one that says you're looking for fleeing Patriots?
No, I tell you right now, I will go out and hand carry them to my place.
Well, I think we ought to just declare Kansas altogether a safe zone for the whole United States. We got all the right Patriots.
I don't mean to be a pissant. I'm just telling you right now, I ain't scared of my local government. I got good people here in Southeast Kansas, and good people are good patriots. And
absolutely.
I'm telling you right now, if Kansas Bureau of Investigation wants to come down here and piss on our parade, they can have to go through my sheriff before they get to me. And I ain't really worried about that because I got a real strong sheriff.
Well, I commend your patriotism, sir. We're going to take a break, and we'll be right back and continue our conversation about the underground radio. Thank you for calling in, Wally.
Wally, I'm going to post a link for you in the chat that gives you a game plan. There it is.
Go ahead.
It's there.
The outpost one?
Yeah.
I got it. Thank you very much. I'll jump on that.
Very good reading on that site, trust me. But we appreciate you calling in, Wally. Thank you, sir.
I appreciate it, guys. Thank
Good
you for
evening.
Listening, putting up with me.
Oh, no problem. All right, we're going to take a break, and we'll be right back, folks.
Well, you wonder why I always dress in black, why you never see bright colors on my back, and why does my appearance seem to have a somber tone? Well, there's a reason for the things that I have on. I wear the black for the poor and the beaten down, living in the hopeless, hungry side of town. I wear it for the prisoner who has long paid for his crime, but is there because he's a victim of the time. I wear the black for those who've never read or listened to the words that Jesus said about the road to happiness through love and charity. Why, you think he's talking straight to you and me? Well, we're doing mighty fine, I do suppose, in our streak of lightning cars and fancy clothes. But just so reminded of the ones who are held back, up front there ought to be a man in black. I wear it for the sick and lonely old, for the reckless ones whose bad trip left them cold. I wear the black in mourning for the lives that could have been. Each week we lose 100 fine young men. And I wear it for the thousands who have died, believing that the Lord was on their side. I wear it for another 100,000 who have died, believing that we all were on their side. Well, there's things that never will be right, I know, and things need changing everywhere you go. But till we start to make a move to make a few things right, you'll never see me wear a suit of white. Oh, I'd love to wear a rainbow every day and tell the world that everything's okay. But I'll try to carry off a little darkness on my back till things are brighter. I'm the man in black.
All right, you're back with Freebird and Gary Hunt, and we're talking about the Underground Railroad. We covered a little bit about history, and we had a couple of callers call in, and we appreciate Wally calling in. And what we want to talk about next, let me ask you this, Gary. Would the expanse of the roads and the highway systems and other means of traveling make it easier or harder to set up a railroad today? What do you think about that?
Well, this goes back to the difference in playing fields, and the link that I posted for Wally talks very specifically about the difference in playing fields between 1776 and now, we're talking about 1850, 1860 and now.
Right.
Back then, if you had somebody hiding in your grain wagon as you were going to town, it would be easy to stop you trotting along at 3 miles an hour at best, and poke bayonets into the grain bags, see if anybody's in them, and all that. Now we've got highways where thousands of cars per hour, tens of thousands of cars per hour pass certain areas. So the only place that they can really catch you is in that initial ring. If the police had a cordoned off around Duncan, Oklahoma, Charles Dyer would have never gotten out of well, he might have gotten out, but it would not be on the roads, because open your trunk, get out of the car, all the stuff they do nowadays. But once you get outside of that ring, that they have to get up in a timely manner.
Yeah. I lost you, Gary. Gary? Well, all right. We got a little problem with the call. Hang on just a minute. We lost Gary. You gotta love Skype and BTR, don't you? Hang in there, folks. Let me try to get Gary back. Oh boy. Okay. I think Gary got knocked offline, folks. Just bear with me here.
Mike.
Yeah, there you are.
Yeah, I had a problem with my internet connection.
Yeah, I saw that. Let me...
Okay, where did... We get. We talked about getting off the corn zone area. Now we've got tens of thousands of cars traveling. You get on the floor, get in the back of a pickup. They can't search everybody. It's impossible.
Right, right.
So in that respect, we can go travel great distances pretty rapidly. It's easy. Well, Peter got 3,000 miles to Florida, and Father went 400 or 500 miles into Idaho. That helps. Now, cell phones are a handicap, is the best way
right.
to put it. Now, I've got a friend that I was talking to the other day, and I've told him this many times. He keeps saying, I'm going to get rid of this damn phone that I've got. I told him, don't. Get a new phone, but if you're ever going north, make your phone go south. If they've tagged your phone, and almost every phone has GPS in it now, you can put your phone on a garbage truck on the way to Mexico, and you're going north. They're first. By that time to get out of the ring, they're following your phone. So they're going to concentrate in the direction that your phone's going, assuming that it's still on you. They have GPS tracking devices that they can put on your car, and here in California, the court decided that they have every right to put a GPS tracking device on anybody's car, that they don't even require a warrant. So if you have a car and you have any suspicions at all and look under the car and find anything odd, take it off, put it on a garbage truck.
Yeah, there you go.
Right, that was to get somebody else's car to transport in.
Yeah. Hang on, Gary. Let's see if we got another caller. Hang on just a second. Area code 530, you're on the air. Hello? Let's try this other one. Area code 504, you're on the air.
Oh, you got Minuteman Fitz here, Free.
Hey, Minuteman. How you doing, partner?
I was just going to comment on that, the whole cell phone. You're overlooking the most important way to do any type of cell phone. It's called a dump phone, which is a pay-as-you-go phone. completely untrackable. Police hate it because there's no way to know who has the phone or what's been purchased on it because there's no connecting dots, especially if you use cash.
Well, yeah, I was talking about a decoy, but you're absolutely right, Bob. But if you use that phone to call people that they know you're in contact with, use it two or three times and then dispose of it the same way. And then pull out the next one. But I'm talking about a decoy. If they're after you and you send the phone one way, they're going to look in that direction. They're going to naturally go in that direction. So that's a decoy that you can set up. That's how we can use technology to our advantage now, because they're going to, if they see the phone going south, they're going to think that you're going that way. They might think, well, he might not be, so we'll just put 20 people down there. But you're going to detract some of their force in that direction because the phone's going down on the garbage truck on the way to Mexico. But, yes, having the throwaway phones.
If you use the throwaway phone, though, and you have the organization set up where everybody has a throwaway phone, they have multiple phones, and you know all the different numbers, you can call one number and then call a different number with a different phone, and they'll never be able to track any constant communication going back and forth.
No, but eventually they'll ID the phone, and so when you run out of time, you throw it away, too, or put it on a garbage truck in case they have gotten it.
Right. It's all a way to distract them because it's so hard to track.
Well, the guy I was talking about, I suggested you get at least two of those throwaway phones and initialize the first one the first time he needs to use it, but keep the other one as a backup just in case, so that if he called me, for example, and if he talked to me enough, we'd assume that maybe they would know because of his proximity in the state he's in that it might be him that he's got a second decoy now. The first phone that the long time one that he would get rid of would now be replaced by the second one, and he's got the third one, and he can stop at the convenience store and always have a backup in case you get compromised somehow. But using technology against them, they're going to make the assumption that you're going where your phone is going, that you're going where your car is going if they put the tracking device on it. So if you don't use your car.
A lot of newer cars, if you've got one, has GPS sometimes built into it that, you know, even though you haven't called OnStar and signed up, they can still activate that at any time without your knowledge.
But the same thing, they can shut down the car with that OnStar, too.
Correct.
If you have OnStar, they can. A lot of the computers allow them access to shut the car down.
Right. So, I mean, you got to be real careful. I mean, some of this stuff that we use today, as far as modern technology, you know, can hinder this whole situation. You got to be very smart about it, you know, and maybe there needs to be alternative signaling systems, you know, just like they used to use back in the old days with the lanterns and things. But as far as communicating and traveling, I think with all the roads, and like Gary was pointing out, you know, back in the old days, they could easily stop those horses and buggies and things like that. But today, it would be a lot easier to move people around. But as long as you're not employing any kind of newer electronic technology that would put this situation at risk, such as, you know, cell phones. I know my phone has a GPS in it, but it, you know, I don't pay to have that feature or function, but if they wanted to know where I was going, they can turn it on without my knowledge, you know, and they can easily see where I'm at or going or things like that. So people who are going to participate in something like this, they would have to use extreme caution that they leave any kind of technology like that behind, you know, and maybe, you know, do find some way, you know, to check your vehicles often. Don't put your vehicles that you're going to use for that type of stuff out in places where they could be tagged or, you know, a device attached to it. You know, keep it garaged, keep it out of, you know, public as much as possible, things of that nature. You know, you guys got any other ideas?
Well, what you need to do, though, is think of technology and use it to our advantage, and that's
correct.
What we have to do. The playing field is different. Now, as far as signs, you know, lanterns on hitching posts, if you had a hitching post in your front yard with a lantern on it, they probably wouldn't figure out what it was. But now let's go to GPS again. If you get a handheld GPS, it does not have a transmitter. It's only a receiver. The Garmins, the
the various small handheld ones, and they're kind of nice because I don't even need an address. All I need is a latitude and a longitude, and if I'm being transported to say, Mike's house, if I have the latitude and longitude in there, most of them have maps on them, and I even know the easiest route, or I can take the longest route and constantly adjust my route. So if you can code the latitude and longitude to somebody by some means of a message or even mail, then that guy can go directly to your front door. Of course, they can too, but if they don't know the latitude and longitude, you can get there. So that's one where the technology comes to our advantage, that you don't have to look for street names and then go down in the middle of the night trying to read the street numbers in the darkness of the street. You can walk right to the front door by looking at your handheld GPS, which has no tracking capability.
Okay, let me take some more calls here. We got, man, I tell you, switchboard's lighting up. Hang on, guys. Area code 321, you're on the air.
Hey, fellas, Watchman Jeff here. How are we doing tonight?
Hey, Jeff, how you doing?
Pretty good. Just listening on the show. I had a question for Gary. I didn't catch the very first 3 minutes of the 30 minutes of the show. Did we already talk about the any of the common law courts and stuff, how that stuff's going?
Yeah, we did.
You're supposed to go down on the bottom of the page, hit the volunteer link, go there, sign up, and make sure you show up on time.
Is that in motion now?
Yeah, we all voted, you've been volunteered.
Yeah, the first trial starts on September 12th.
Okay.
Yeah, so we've got a continuous banner on our chat page there that you can click on and go to and get the information on the responsibilities and volunteering and all that good stuff.
Let me get your thoughts on something, Gary, and anybody here in the chat room. What do you do about a so-called patriot that was a patriot that's supposed to be your pal that's basically sworn on the Holy Bible to stand by you and not shit on you, and now this scumbag is doing all kinds of stuff, I mean, basically, you know, coming after you and just some really nasty stuff?
Well, the question on that? Yeah, the question is, why is he doing that? I just put a link in there to an article called Informants Amongst Us, and it has to do with a friend of mine who received a plea agreement from the government. He did not sign it. He was supposed to not give it out. He gave it to me, so I can't give his name out. But why did he?
Yeah, I don't want to give a name out. It's a bit of a story.
You wonder why he turned, and if he truly wants to be a patriot, then you need to get him in this system, especially when things get hot. Now,
the attack's not on me. It's someone that a few people know, but it's gotten out of hand. I mean, it's come to an attack on the man's personal family, his livelihood, his income, his everything.
Well, somebody needs to file a complaint with the common law court. We can handle more than one complaint at a time.
You know, I know for a fact, looking at his IP address, you know, he's in there trolling our Watchman Live show on Sundays, and you know, I banned him a couple times, and I'm pretty sure he's probably in here listening as an anonymous. He's not posting, so I can't look at the IP address. But if you are listening out there, you know, I'm going to tell you something. If you don't stop your shit, I want to do everything I possibly can to put on a full-out attack on your ass. And I will let the whole internet patriot community know how much of a piece of shit you really are, because I have copies of all your emails and all your bullshit and all your lies and all your frauds and all your threats.
Let me interrupt you here. The remedy is what we did talk about the first half hour. The remedy is for you to file a complaint against him in the common law court. Let's get this out in the open, and it will either expose him or get him to change his ways. That's the whole reason behind the court. You need to file a complaint. If you follow the same link to committee.org, go to the common law court page, all the information you need to file a complaint is there. Grand jury will hear it. They'll sort it down to the counts, and he'll be given the opportunity to answer the complaint. If he does not answer the complaint,
quite simply, the indictment will be posted for everybody to read. Your accusation about him will be up there. If he doesn't want to answer it, then it has to stand alone because he's not been, he's not manned up to what he said, and he's not willing to go and say, yes, this is what I said, and it's true, and I can prove it. So he loses by the indictment not being answered and it being posted for everybody to see. But it stops the pissing contest.
But the thing is,
that's
is
what
I
has
can't.
To stop.
The thing is I can't file the indictment or file a complaint because I'm not the attack yet. I mean, I say yet because I'm sure it's coming. I'm sure that I'm his next target, and I'm just trying to stay out of it for right now. But for what I'm seeing, that's happening to this friend of mine. Is, I mean, if this guy lived even remotely a couple of states away from me, I'd be kicking in his fucking front door. I've had enough of this guy.
Get your friend to file a complaint. Help him file the complaint. You can help him with it. You know, the accuser and the accused can both have assistance of counsel. That means that when you go to court, you got two of you that can participate on it. Somebody can help you. You can help this friend of yours if he just doesn't feel confident that he can go on and make the charges and all that. You can be his assistance of counsel and help him through the whole thing.
I think what he's wanting to do right now, and that's one reason I'm just trying to stay neutral about it, is he's just taking all this garbage from this guy and compiling this, just that much more evidence to use. If you knew the truth of what I'm talking about and the individual I'm talking about, it would blow your mind. It's just sad. It's sad that there are individuals that will stoop to this level over absolutely nothing. Nothing. Nothing was done to this individual to provoke this. It's just
there are
pure ignorance and hatred.
There are two sides to every story, and what you're doing right now, absent the name of the party, is exactly what we're trying to stop.
Yeah.
It needs to be addressed in a forum where it can be dealt with.
It will be. We'll get some more stuff together, and it'll all be put out in the open here before too long.
Well, that's the solution, and that's the best solution. That's the one that serves us all. Otherwise, it just escalates. It's bigger and bigger. Every week is going to be a bigger pissing contest.
Yeah, I agree. I'm just so aggravated with it anymore. I can't even get on the internet.
Now, we look forward to the complaint coming in so we can deal with it.
Well, I'll get with them, and we'll see what we come up with. Anyways, I'm going to give it back to you and let it go back to the Underground Railroad. I've been it off myself, and hopefully the individual is listening in the room. Let him know what's coming.
Well,
hurt coming his way.
If you don't receive an apology from him, get your friend to file.
All right. There ain't no apology coming from this clown. See y'all later. Have a good night. Thanks for all your efforts and everything you do, Gary. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Y'all have a good night.
All right. Bye. Thank you, Jeff. Okay, hang on, Gary. We got a couple of people. This one's been holding a while. Let me see who it is. Okay, sorry. Area code 540, you're on the air. Sorry to keep you waiting.
It's okay. Hey, this is Bubba.
Hey,
how's
Bubba,
everybody?
How you doing? Pretty good.
Doing good. A couple things I kind of wanted to go over per the conversations you're having. I worked in OPSEC, anti-terrorism stuff, for a long time. And I can tell you a lot of this stuff, the GPSs and everything else, you have to think first, these are all made in China. Who knows what they're putting on this stuff, first of all. There's stuff that our government's buying from them that they're using that they don't even know what's on there. Okay. Now, all the new passports, if you have a passport, you look on it, it has a little funny-looking symbol on the bottom. They all have an RFID chip in them. And I was talking to a guy the other day, and he has a new passport. He's supposed to be good for going to Canada and Mexico, some nonsense. Basically, it's the new Gestapo ID card that they're supposed to be issuing everybody.
Right.
It has an RFID chip in it.
Is it true that you can take those passports?
All that stuff.
Is it true that you can take those passports and put them in a microwave and it kills the chip in those passports or not?
I'm not sure about that one. There's things you can get, wallets and like passport covers. Like my wallet I have has a foil in it, and it won't work with the foil. The RFID won't pass through it, and the same thing with the passport holder. It has a foil thing in there and won't pass through. There's a few different places out there that market those. What else was I going
to
say?
Best ones are what they call the Faraday wrapping, and they used to send hard drives in them, and it was a Mylar bag,
yeah.
But it had a crosswork pattern of metal strips in it to spoil any radio signal that or any signal that might get in and damage the hard drive. And if you've got one of those old hard disk envelopes that they came in around, that is probably the best thing. It's called a Faraday cage.
Yeah.
Now,
these wallets and stuff basically have the same type of deal in them. And you can get, like, little slick covers and everything else. And something else I was going to say, too, when you're traveling and everything, you can't use a credit card at all. If you use your credit card, boom, they got a 10-digit grid cording on you right now. You know exactly where you were, at least where your credit card was. So,
absolutely.
You're going to give somebody your credit card and tell them to go to Mexico or something. They'll take your head and south with your cell phone. But I don't want somebody else running up my card.
Well, let me talk about handheld GPSs. Though I'm a surveyor, and we use GPS technology for surveying. And I've got a $58,000 GPS sitting here in the room with me, and it transmits a signal out. But a GPS itself, the handhelds, do not have any signal going out. And even if they did, they would have to key that signal to you. They would have to know it was your GPS. But GPS works on a simple process called trilateration. It gets at least three, best five or more satellites, and actually measures the time interval between the satellite and the received signal, and then coordinates those and determines triangles to all the satellites and resolves the position to where you are. There is nothing transmitted out in a handheld GPS.
So you're referring to these things like Garmins and TomToms and stuff like that,
right?
Gary.
Yeah.
Hang on, man. We got another.
See, it's not keyed to you in the first place. You don't sign up for it. You just turn it on.
Okay.
I'll throw out something else, and I'll get off and let you go back to it. Everybody needs to go out to Google your name, and see what's out there on you. Go to all these search sites. Pipple's one. Verome's another good one. Go out there to all these sites. That's where people keep. That's where they do their. It's called open source intelligence. And that's the first place they're going to go. And they're going to start looking for you on that. This is just the basic stuff. I mean, the government has a whole lot more stuff. But anytime you fill out anything on the Internet, anytime you fill out any form at the gas station to get a free something or another, all that data is being stored someplace, and that's how they're tracking you. So,
well, I'm one of those terrorists. I don't have a credit
card,
so I buy everything with cash.
Yeah.
If you've seen the most recent FBI notice.
All right, thank you, Bubba, for calling in.
You're right, Bubba. You have to think of the consequences of what you do. There was a case a couple of years ago that's kind of interesting. Some people out of Phoenix, a guy and his girlfriend killed the guy's wife and then went to France, and they went all this time without using credit cards. Then his birthday came up, and she decided to get him a real nice bracelet. I don't know, diamonds and all that, $11,000 I think it was. So she went down, took the credit card, and bought it, and the police got them within 2 days. They were held in France until they got the extradition. They came back and stood trial for murder.
Yeah.
All they did is use that card once in a foreign country,
and
they were picked up.
Simple mistake. Okay, hang on just a minute. Erica 317, sorry to keep you waiting. You're on the air.
Hi, this is Sentinel of the Republic from Indiana.
Yes, sir. How you doing? Welcome to the show.
Doing good. I was listening to the program, and I was listening to the talk about the Underground Railroad, and it got me a little fired up.
Okay.
Kind of put off by the fact that some people might think there would have to be an Underground Railroad. But I guess my first statement would have to be what would spur... spur patriots to get into action, mobilize, and
even get involved with something like this to start with, is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, I'm thinking about this upcoming and pending UN this new UN law to the ban public citizen public ownership of weapons that could seriously put patriots like me and others out on the streets, and it could start something really messy. And then when we start thinking about underground railroads, I'm thinking really as far as patriots go, taking to the streets and things getting messy, the basic question I want to ask is, well, are our Army reserves and are our military services abroad enough to deter a patriot uprising? And I don't want your opinion on that.
I don't think that they are. I let me say, I don't doubt that the military will be used, and a lot of them will go along with their orders. And I can refer back to something that happened in the 90s. A fellow named Michael New refused to wear UN blue. He was assigned to a UN unit, and he was going to be put under a Czechoslovakian or Yugoslavian commander, and he said, no, I'm not going to wear UN blue. He went through 4 or 5 years of court-martial on it. Now, when I talked to Michael New, he was still in Germany, and it was before he refused to step out and take up the blue, light blue beanie, beret. He said that most of the people in his unit support him, but they have jobs and they have families to support, and their job is the Army. And they're going to do what they're told, so they put on the berets. Michael New was the only one. He didn't have a family. He was homeschooled. He was probably more principled than most of the ones that came out of public school. But I think that we can expect that what's going to happen is local police will participate thinking it's a drug bust. Once they realize there were no drugs, but the government was there to get a patriot, it's going to be too late. They've compromised themselves. They've given up their integrity. They've participated in a raid. So there's a million men in this country, the law enforcement agencies that can be brought in with the suits, the FBI, BATF, DHS, and the other agencies that can come in and sweep people. Now, what I expect is going to happen is there's an article. I just posted two links. The first one is the simplified version of the plan, and it talks about white areas. White areas are safe. Now, when we talk about people having to flee now, we had Paul Fada and Peter Chernoff back in the 90s, and we have Charles Dyer now. So we're talking about now. We're not talking about later. When it becomes an open conflict, there's a whole different scenario. And when, as we secure white areas, which will be the link that I'm going to post now, what we can expect to happen initially, and I'm thinking that if it doesn't happen sooner, we can expect that what Gore called for, which he called the American Spring, modeled after the Arab Spring, he calls it a peaceful revolution, will turn violent. And I'll use it for instance. C3CM is the last link I posted now. It's number 193. Had to do with somebody that I met back in the 90s. And she explained to me her job for Department of Defense, and it was working on an internal C3CM, and it's not the command situation that most military, the Air Force, Army, Navy, and Marines all have, and Coast Guard have. It's a different one. But the idea is to identify in one class the people that are, say, leadership in the Patriot community, and then they break them into three groups, or people involved, heavily involved in Patriot community, then they have three groups, the leadership, the potential leadership, and the followers. The first thing they're going to do is they're going to go after those A1s, the leadership of the Patriot community. And what they're going to do is like they do on a drug bust where it's 8 o'clock in California, 9 o'clock in Nevada, 10 o'clock in the Iowa, and 11 o'clock in New York. They're going to sweep in all within an hour so notice can't be sent out, and they're going to use local law enforcement, and they're going to get the Patriot community, get them arrested. And just for an example, they might come and get me and say, well, we know you started that, were behind the violence in the San Francisco peaceful demonstration. I don't even know those people. Well, tell it to the judge. And 6 or 8 months later, after I've been in jail 6 or 8 months, I get to tell it to the judge. No, well, we made a mistake, but it's too late. I've been taken out. Mike's been taken out of Kentucky, and Wally's been taken out of Kansas because of their potential for leadership.
the military isn't necessary to make that first sweep. No, the military can be brought in and used selectively, but all they have to do is get these guys to qualify, compromise their principles. It happened at Kent State when they shot the students. So I think that the military is more likely initially to support the government than the patriot community. Now, you'll find people in the military, they get back here, and then their principles are so great that they say, I got to get out of this. But where am I going to go? Now, at that point, we need to have a place for him to go, because if he has no place to go, he can't leave his unit. He's not just going to go out and stand alone until he's shot down for desertion. So he has to have a place to go. So this Underground Railroad, for example, would be a way if he goes to somebody that he knew and he says, look, I'm in the military. I don't want to do what they're doing. I need you to hide me. Then you start moving him through the system and get him to one of the white areas that are described in that one article that I wrote about the simplified version of the plan. But I don't think the military is going to be necessary to take out our leadership. Now, let's go one step further. Schaefer Cox, I think we all know who he is. He was up in Alaska. He had 8 people in his command circle. He claimed to have a 3,500-man militia. What happened when Schaefer Cox was picked up by the government is one of those 8, one of his top circle, was an informant or an agent. And he's going to testify against Cox. So what happens now when somebody in your unit, for example, even a militia unit, is for one reason or another been compromised? If you signed a plea agreement and he's turned states willing to work for the government, or if he's an actual agent, undercover agent, that's worked his way up, and he's moved himself to a near command situation, and you get taken out, and now there's a void in command, and suppose he gets picked to move into your place as command. Now all of a sudden you've got somebody that has the best interest of the government at heart in command of this militia unit.
True.
So, you know, the risk now, this didn't happen during the revolution, except with Benedict Arnold, but there's serious potential of infiltration becoming a disaster on us and their methodology, which is why I wrote the plan, because if we take the initiative, we screw up their schedule, we screw up their plans. But if they have the initiative, they have their schedule, and they have their plans. And
That's right.
The first time in over 20 years, I'm willing to make a prediction that by March of this year, or next year, while Obama's still in office, and when Gore's American Spring happens, something will happen. Now, I have some people I've talked to that believe that there's something called for on December 17th or September 17th. That could be the start of it. But we're getting awful close to something happening that will give the government the tools. There's no such thing as a peaceful demonstration if, one, they've got somebody infiltrate your group to start breaking windows. Two, the cops, the G20 in Pittsburgh, the cops started the violence. And it's easy. Back in the 60s, in the anti-war demonstrations, most often the cops started the violence, but then they blamed it on the protesters. So it's easy when you get a large group of people, and look at this flash mob scenario too. That's kind of scary. They start a bunch of people start a flash mob, and all of a sudden you've got violence. So there's 3 different ways that the violence can start, and once it starts, it's kind of opened the door for them to make any accusations they want, and the press will back them up and justify the accusations they've made. So unless we take the initiative, we're going to be way downhill when they take the initiative and start taking out our leadership.
Well, it goes back to the old analogy where you cut the head off the snake. I mean, that's what they're going to do. They're going to go after, you know, anybody who's anybody at the head of this patriot movement, because they have followers, and they're going to take them out first and disorient these groups, you know, whether it's a Tea Party group or a militia group or just a patriot network of some sort. By taking out that leadership first and doing it on a massive scale, then they disrupt things and catch us off guard. I mean, you know, it's just whoever gets the first blow in has the advantage. So That's where this Underground Railroad comes in, is that if we're tipped off in any way, or, you know, we get intelligence that's, you know, certain group of people or a certain person is going to be hit, which by that I mean, you know, malicious prosecution, whatever, you know, knowing damn good and well that the charges are false. You know, Charles Dyer, for God's sake, spent a year in jail, and they wind up dropping the weapons charges. I mean, you know, so they're going to try to take you off the streets and make you ineffective. So whether you're found innocent or guilty at the end is irrelevant. They've took you off the street. But if you can get a heads up in some manner, and you've got some important people that are leaders in this community, then they're henceforth an Underground Railroad system to try to fall under for protection. That's where we're headed with this.
Very well said, guys. I have a very good understanding of what the railroad represents right now. And before I called, I really didn't have an understanding of what the railroad represented, but now I do. And I really appreciate you guys' answer. And, you know, just God bless America. And the more rifle teams we can set up in each community, and the more educated men we can set up in each community, is better. So just keep up the fight, and let's just keep a vigilant eye.
Well, Underground Railroad that needs to be set up right now is that small community of people that you trust. If you feel that you need to go underground, you go to one of them. And as I mentioned about what happened in Florida, of our seven in the security team, only two of us knew about Peter and Linda and Alex. Only two of us needed to know. So if you just pick the one that you feel most comfortable with and go see him and say, I've got to hide out and you need to get me out of the area. That's the extent. But it's people you know, people you've talked to, had a beer with, and you trust them with your life. They will know somebody in the next county, and the railroad builds itself by people knowing people and passing them on to people they know.
Awesome. Well, thanks for educating me on the subject, and God bless America, and have a good night.
Thank you, sir, for calling in. We appreciate it.
Take care. Bye.
All right. Have a good night. Yeah, so I think, Gary, the important thing, you know, back in the day, you know, they had established routes. They had established safe houses that were, they had signaling devices and means of coded messages and things. But, you know, I think you're right. The real start of something of this nature in our day and time is to be very cautious of electronic devices, but more importantly, start in smaller cliques of groups of people in your community or family that you know you can trust, and let the railroad build itself to get you where you need to go.
And if you set it up ahead of time, you just subject it to compromise.
Correct, yeah, exactly.
Now, Easy Dog had a question about the 14th Amendment, and I think we pretty much covered the railroad, unless somebody else has a question on the railroad.
Okay.
So
now we're,
I know he's been itching for over an hour to ask the question.
Okay. Go ahead. Our switchboard's clear, so go ahead.
But
yeah.
You're looking at your future, and let's just say you set up the railroad now, and then all of a sudden you start having doubts about this guy that's part of a system, and he knows the whole structure of the railroad. If he gets compromised, the government has the whole structure of the railroad. That's why it has to build as it goes. And once it gets hot and heavy, people will be more firm in picking their side, knowing that if they get charged with a crime, they can go into that railroad. But right now, where are they going to hide? And until the shit hits the fan, and there are white areas, safe areas in the country, they've got no place to go. So they're more susceptible to compromise now than they will be when it starts to get hot and heavy. And that's the time that the railroad should be built and expanded.
Yes, sir. Hang on. We got one last caller here. We just got a few minutes. Let me see who this is. Okay, area 620. We got about 5 minutes.
Hey, Freebird. This is Wally 515. I only want to push the comms that the Watchman American has to offer. And that's the ham radio operators.
Okay.
I want to push. If you want to be in the Freedom Railroad here, you want to be part of that railroad process. You need to have communications able to circumvent the normal communication networks, and that's the ham radio operator.
Right. That's one possibility, but I would also caution that those things can be, monitored by.
Sure, it's openly networked, but it's FCC operated. But you want to talk about an established communication network? You can definitely pass communication across that bandwidth.
Personal communication is the best because then there's only one person in line that had. If he's compromised. You're compromised. If you have a network of ham radio and somebody compromises your code, then that whole network is down because the government now has the code. So you send a courier out.
That's a good point, Gary.
You're talking about courier instead of ham operators. I just wanted to throw that out there as a last point of operation. And you got the Pony Express out there, and you got the word getting out there real quick, but. Yeah, you're right. For ComSec, you might want to consider some other alternative.
Well, there's uses for that network. I mean, we're all, people, patriots everywhere are going to need to know what's going on, and then, that's why they need to get tapped into a comms network, and that's what we're trying to help build. But, for operations like this, you wouldn't want to necessarily involve it in that type of comms. You got to handle it on a more personal basis, I would think.
Yeah, everything you do needs to be well thought out and everything, absolutely everything possible to minimize risk because there are two people, the one hiding him and the one that's fleeing, plus their network that come at risk. So you have a lot of people that can be taken out if you don't do everything to reduce every possible risk that you have, including, as I mentioned, using decoys. Getting on the phone and say, I've got a friend here and I'm going to take him to Arizona, but instead take him up to Wally in Kansas. But on the phone, you say, I'm going to take him to Arizona. That, again, if they're listening to your phone, if they're not, doesn't hurt a bit. If they are, then they think you're going to Arizona. Think and minimize your risk. Use decoys. Use deception to try and redirect them away from what your intentions are.
Absolutely. Good point. Anything else, Wally?
What do you do when you get caught? I mean, let's say somebody shows up at my house and I'm trying to help them out, and then next thing I got the FBI, the KBI, and all the G.I. Joe thing, I'd call them other words, but the knuckleheads showing up with their little freaking
Let me tell you what your answer is. What do you mean here's your answer. What do you mean he's wanted? A friend said said he needed a place to stay, and I said he could stay here. I didn't know he was wanted.
I mean, do you resist with arms, or do you resist with words? Or
if you resist with arms, you're making your last stand, and you cannot fight another day. But if is it better for one of you to get arrested and the other one to say I didn't know he was wanted, and one of you still on the street, or is it better for both of you to get arrested? So you just go into denial. I mean, how can they prove that you knew he was wanted? He needed a place to spend the night. I told a friend of mine he could spend the night here. We've got room for him.
It's called plausible deniability.
Yeah, the government uses it all the time.
But, Bulldog, I'm telling you right now, I'm not one to lie. If you come to my property and I say you can stay there, you kiss my ass. I don't care what freaking acronym you use behind your words. If you come on my property, we're going to have problems.
Well, that becomes your last stand. You know, I'll tell you a situation. It was a failure to appear a warrant. The police came to my office to arrest me. They broke the door down, came in with their 9 millimeters drawn and pointed at me. I had a little 9 millimeter 380 about 6 inches from my hand, and I had an AK-47 with a round in the chamber and 30 rounds in the magazine. I started thinking, am I going to get killed over a traffic ticket? So I got up with my hands up and walked away from the desk, and they never saw the guns. They should have if they'd looked around, but they were so intent on watching me, and I walked with my hands up that I got arrested. I didn't want to die over a traffic ticket. Every time you run, now some friends of mine, George Sibley and Linda Lyon, they were stop a cop was going to arrest George in Opelika, Alabama. They got in a gunfight. They killed the cop. Then they got surrounded by police. They didn't get away. They stood a couple years, 4 years, convicted and on death row, and finally both of them were executed. But you have to weigh the situation you're in, and you've got to make snap decisions, just like you do in the military in a combat situation. What is my best choice at this point in time? If you want to fight it out, you can fight it out. More than likely, you will be overwhelmed. You might take a bunch of them with you, but chances are you won't fight another day. So if you can walk away and fight again another day, that is the best option. That's my opinion. I mean,
Interesting opinion. Interesting opinion. It just comes hard. It's a hard sell to a patriot. And when I say that, I don't mean that in a lackadaisical way. I'm just
it's
saying.
When you make a
line in the sand, it's a hard sell to say, you know what, your consequences are is your life, and my God, if you make that choice and it's your life, and you need to be aware that you're going to give it up, and when it's up, it's up.
Well, understand, I had a reason for having that pistol on my desk.
Sure.
Come down to the reality of the situation, you've got to think real fast and weigh it. And, you know, it's humbling to say, look, if I get caught in that situation, I'm going to come out with my hands up. So nobody wants to say that. But you don't know. What do they call it? When the rubber hits the road, that's when you have to decide. And so don't be ashamed of making a decision that allows you to fight another day if you can do it. If one person out of 20 is compromised or one out of two is compromised because you want to fight another day, let the one go. It's better for everybody that you are available to help them. And at this point, you're pissed off, and you're ready to take on battle, too. But you're going to do it under better circumstances than you having your house surrounded by cops and them having rifles pointed at you.
Yeah, especially with my situation. If the rifles were getting pointed, it'd be my neighbors. And I know my neighbors. My neighbors, if they point the weapons at me, then I know their granddads, their grandmothers, and aunts and uncles.
If you're married and have children,
it's a little harder situation for me.
If you're married and have children, do you want to risk the lives of your wife and children?
I've gone through that already. I've been 20 years in the Marine Corps. I chose that path a long time ago, and that decision has been made many, 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 many times. And family, wife, children, I mean, the core belief is the core belief, and it's either yours or it's not yours. I don't mean to take a point. I'm just saying, when you come to that predicament in life and you've already made that decision in life, then family, kids, choice, wife, what, I mean, those things have been considered and they've been prioritized. When it comes time to make that decision, they are way down the line on when it comes time to pull the trigger or not pull the trigger. I don't mean to belittle anything you're saying, but that's just, I've gone through that already more than once, and it's kind of hard to sell me for that idea.
Well, like I said, the real challenge comes when you find yourself in a situation that you've always thought about, and you have to make the decision. And if one decision will allow you to fight another day, I would suggest that that's the best one. But you're there, and if you decide, well.
I agree with you.
Combat, you know, you give your life for your buddies. If you decide, well, I can take three of them out before they get me, and you decide that you want to trade three for one, then go ahead, trade three for one, or one for one, whatever you pick on.
Sure.
Well, I think the important thing is for us to save the best, biggest numbers of the best of us, you know, to fight this battle that's coming. And, you know, like it's a personal choice of what a person has to do to, you know, to pick their battles, but the main thing is to win the end of the day, and you know, choosing those situations wisely. You know,
wisely.
And you know,
don't
it's
piss
a
it away.
Situation.
Don't piss it away for
that's right.
For pride. Pride is not worth pissing it away.
That's right. Well, listen, thank you, Wally, for calling in. Appreciate it.
All right, buddy.
You have a good evening.
Good. You stay safe. I'll holler at you when it begins raining.
Thank you, sir. All right.
Bye.
Good night. Well, Gary, I'll tell you about time flies, man. This show went by. It's the fastest 2 hours in radio, I think. I wish we could have had another hour to spend on it. Looks like we got a lot of people engaged, and we've shared a lot of good information, got them thinking about things, and that's what we're all here for.
Well, I hope that it's helped everybody. As I've explained, I've been involved in it, and I saw what worked, and so I'm sharing that experience with you. And I have concerns about the other one, knowing things that I've done research on, like C3CM and Informus Amongst Us, that do put us at a greater degree of risk. And I have been in that situation where they came in with guns drawn, and I had my pistol on the desk because I expected that I would fight, and then the decision had to be made, and so all I did then is keep them from seeing the guns. That became the important thing. So
Well, I encourage anybody to get over there to Gary's website. We've got a continuous link to the Outpost of Freedom down below the chat room there. Get over there and read these articles. A wealth of information there. It comes from a very, very experienced gentleman, and we're glad to have you here, Gary, sharing that with us. We didn't get to give away that other night. The show got so engaged, and we had so many callers, but maybe we'll be able to do that at another show. So we'll pick that up, and I want to say thank you, Gary, for joining us. And folks, get over there to the Committees of Safety website, Common Law Court, and check that out and volunteer. We need your help. So anything you want to close with, Gary?
No. Well, yes. Somebody's provided me some information on through the chat, Chitango chat. But
okay.
You have to go through the process. I mean, we keep an email that where you volunteer to prove that you volunteered. You will have to do a secrecy oath. Everybody on the grand jury and everybody on the PT jury has taken it. So you have to go through the channels. I hate to put it that way. It sounds like a bureaucracy, but we should have something that protects everybody.
That's right.
As much as possible. So go to the link on the page. If you're on line mail and your browser won't let you click the link to send the email to the clerk of the court, then type in the address. It's clerk@committee.org. And then just provide your information there. And once the clerk gets the email, then you'll get an email back from the clerk. And if you're deficient in any information, they'll ask you what it is. And once you sign up, you'll be given the secrecy oath. And all you do then is fill your name in two places and email it back. And that's kept by the clerk to say that you've taken the oath. If you violate the oath, we'll say this guy violated his oath. That's all we can do. Nobody's going to get hung at dawn.
Right.
But you have to go through the channels. We've set them up, and we expect everybody to go through the same channels. And there's a reason for it. And, yeah, we're collecting names. But, no, and can the government get to them? Probably. I can't help that. You know, they have control of the Internet. Face it. And anything you do on the Internet is susceptible. But if you want to participate in the court, and you've been talking about what firearms you have, there's less risk in participating in the court than there is by telling them that you've got an AK-47.
Absolutely, yeah. People have to understand, you know, and use OPSEC and everything they do. They just have to be more conscious about these things. But certainly glad to have you with us here, as always, Gary, and let's get together soon again and keep sharing information with the folks out there. All right, so we'll close out the show. And, folks, I appreciate you tuning in. The show will be archived. I know we ran a little over, so you can catch the rest of it. And until next time, this is Freebird signing off. Thank you, Gary, for joining me this evening. A pleasure as always.
Well, thank you for the invitation, and I hope you all have gained from it. If you have any additional questions, feel free to contact me on Skype or email me at hunt@outpost-of-freedom.com.
Absolutely. All right. Thank you, sir. And I'll say good night and God bless the Patriots.